First of all, just a Chag Sameach, of course, for Yom Cherus Yerushalayim. And second, a note that Shir is planned for this coming Wednesday at 11:30 a.m. to wrap up the rest of this topic, because we are not going to end up finishing it today. I'm just putting everybody on mute by default, and then you can unmute for questions and such, but that way we'll avoid background noise issues. God willing, internet cooperating between this week's shiur and the one on Wednesday, we'll actually get through the rest of Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. Very, very fast recap. We began by looking at the Gemara on Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, and the story involving the porters who broke the barrels of an Amora, Rava, Barbara, Hanan, whoever exactly this Amora was. And suddenly everything went odd on my screen. Can people still hear me? All the videos reset. Can people still hear me?
Okay,
great. That was just my computer being funny. Okay, so again, the porters broke the barrels. He said, I want damages, and he took their coats for payment of the damages. They complained to Rav, and Rav said, you have to give them back their coats. He didn't say you have to give them back their coats, I should say. He may have said you have to give them back their coats. He definitely quoted a pasuk in Mishlei that led him to give back their coats. They then said, you know, we're hungry, we're poor, we worked all day, we got nothing. And at that point, we get the other half of the pasuk in Mishlei, and that leads him to actually pay them their salary. As part of that, he says to Rav, Dina Hachi, each time, is this in fact the rule that I have to either restore their coats to them or pay them? And in our edition in the Gemara, the answer is in. Yes, you actually have to do that. Indicating apparently that that's a halachic obligation. However, we noted that not everybody has that addition. So we went through a few different aspects of this Gemara. We asked, is this a case of pshia? Was this a case of carelessness on their part? Then if so, why aren't they the other way around. We said if there was no pshia, if there was no carelessness, why don't they just swear they weren't careless and then collect? And Ramban thought that that was what this was actually all about, that he wanted them to swear that they weren't careless, and he took the cloaks not as payment, but rather he took the cloaks to get them to swear or pay up for the damages. Rashi said it actually was a case of carelessness. The Meiri said no, it was not a case of it was not a case of carelessness. We talked about, I'm rushing a little bit through this review, I hope that it's still useful. We talked about whether their identity as porters actually matters. Are they indeed being treated specially because they are indigent and they are needy? We had those who argued yes, it's a function of their neediness. We're going to have to come back to that idea. We had those who argued that part of their treatment is because they are needy, that the Lefnim Mishuras Hadin says don't hold them liable for breaking the barrels, having nothing to do with their neediness, and then paying them their salary is specifically because they are needy. And then we talked about why Rav brings Psukim and Mishlei instead of bringing the classic Lefnim Mishuras Hadin Pasuk of Asher Ya'asun, which the Gemara elsewhere in fact uses. Why is it that Rav doesn't bring that drush and instead brings the psukim from Mishlei? And we noted, and this is really the first part that's very important for our discussion today, that Tosfos uses that as a basis for saying this story is actually not a Lefnim Mishuras Hadin story. Lefnim Mishuras Hadin is not part of our conversation here. This is a nice chesed case. And the way that Tosfos frames it is that Lefnim Mishuras Hadin applies specifically where, by the letter of the law, other people will be obligated to take on a certain action. However, you personally are exempt from that action. Example, Rabbi Yishmael is old, or perhaps respected as a Talmud Chacham, and therefore not obligated to help somebody else with his burden of wood, nonetheless, he chooses to help this other person with the burden of wood, lifnim mishuras hadin, because other people would be obligated to do so. But lifnim mishuras hadin is where there is a din that would obligate other people to pursue a particular type of behavior, and you personally are exempt. That was one distinction that Tosfos made. The other distinction is that lifnim mishuras hadin normally applies where you're not suffering a loss, whereas here he suffered a loss. He suffered the loss of the barrels. So in the case here, in the discussion of the porters on Daf Pei Gimel, this is not a lifnim mishuras hadin case, first of all, because no one who has had their barrels destroyed is going to really be required to exempt somebody from liability for it, and certainly to pay their salary, and because you suffered a loss. The Tosfos says this isn't lifnim mishuras hadin. Ezer asked the question last week of why not use a pasuk from Chumash for Chesed instead of using a pasuk from Mishlei for Chesed, and I gave a partial answer already last week, but I want to come back to that actually this week because I had a further thought on it. The last bit of our discussion was, is Rav's ruling a psak? When Rav says that he's supposed to return the coats and then he's supposed to pay them, is that actually a psak? From the story, it sounds like a psak. He says to him, do it. And it's clear that Rav Avrahana is not in the mood to do it. He's only doing it because Rav is telling him to do so. However, we had multiple reasons to say it's not a psak. First of all, the parallel sugya in the Rishalmi does not present it as a psak at all. It's more of a hint. Hey, go tell him this pasuk and see what happens. Number two, the Rif's version of this, it does not have Rav reply in. When the question is this the letter of the law? You don't get a yes response in the Rif's version of it. Number three, the cases that we know are lefnim mishuras hadin, generally speaking, don't involve any form of psak or even a beis din. Meaning, the case of Yishma Rabbi Yossi with the wood is his personal decision that he is going to buy the wood off of the guy to avoid having to help him load himself with it, and he acts like Nimishu as I did. It's a personal decision. No beis din is involved. When Rabbi Chiya, the money changer, makes a mistake in identifying a coin as being valid when it's really not valid, and he decides he's going to pay it back, there's no beis din that's compelling him to do so. Those are the classic lifnim mishuras hadin cases, the ones with the pasuk from Parshas Yisro, and those don't involve anything other than a personal decision. Ditto for the cases of lifnim mishuras hadin that don't quote psukim. So Rav Papa has a case in which he buys land off of somebody because somebody wants to get cash for a particular purpose. Then the seller doesn't need the cash anymore for that purpose, and Rav Papa returns the land to him. There's no beis din involved in that conversation. Ditto the Gemara in Brachos that talks about pausing while you're eating in order to allow somebody else to make a mezuman, that two people would pause. Hang on, Rav Sammy, I see your note. The idea that two people should pause and let somebody else bench also doesn't seem to involve a beis din. The one question mark that we had was the case in Bava Metzia Chavdalad Amud Beis. The case in Bava Metzia Chavdalad Amud Beis, in which we talked about returning a lost object in the marketplace, as you noted last week, that language sounds a little bit more like there is an obligation for somebody to actually do this, that there will be some kind of a duty to do this, and it sounds more like a psak. So if Sammy notes in the chat, is there a difference between a chiyuv and a psak? Could it be a chiyuv even without a beis din? And the answer is potentially yes. Potentially, yes. The question really is, there are three different possibilities. There's a possibility that this is just something you choose to do. There's the possibility that this is something that you're supposed to do. And then there's a possibility that this is something that a beis din executes. That's going to matter. We're going to come back to that possibility. I will ask in general, if people could, if you have a question or a comment, I actually prefer if you interrupt me with it, as opposed to putting it in the chat. If there's background noise going on at home and that's why you need to put it in the chat, I respect that. But otherwise, I actually would prefer that you interrupt me with it. So just know that. The last argument for saying that it's not an obligation, and here I mean not an obligation and not something that a Beis Din is going to say either, is simply that by definition, lifnim mishuras hadin should not be an obligation. That's why we call it lifnim mishuras hadin. It's beyond the letter of the law. It's not what the letter of the law says. Indeed, if our Gemara in fact is an example of Rav saying you have to do this, then why is it beyond the letter of the law at all? So we noted last time that the answer may be this is a unique case because of who Rav Bar Chana is, because he is a wonderful person at Tzaddik and Amora and so on. Maybe he has a unique obligation that others would not have. And that's one possibility. Another possibility would be to argue that lifnim mishuras hadin just means it's not din in terms of what the other guy deserves. That doesn't make it optional to you. I didn't say this last time. That doesn't make it optional for you. It just means that the other guy doesn't deserve it. It's lifnim mishuras hadin in terms of him, but it's a din that you have to do it. In the same way, to give an analogy, that tzedakah works, right? I have an obligation to give tzedakah to help people. That does not entitle a pauper to come take my money. But it's my obligation to support him. So maybe you could look at lifnim mishuras hadin that way. It's not din in terms of him having a right to it, but it's din in terms of me having an obligation to provide it. You can make that argument. Okay. I realize that was a very rapid, probably too rapid, summary of where we've been, but hopefully starting from here, things will slow down and be more clear. Here's what I want to do. I want to look at three challenges to the answer that Rav gave to Rabbah Bar Bar Chanan in our Gemara. If the answer really is, yes, you're supposed to pay, you're supposed to give them back their coats, you're supposed to pay them their salary, I have three problems, two halachic and one practical. That's number one. And number two, I want to move on from this narrow discussion of Pei Gimel to get a much better sense of what exactly Lifnim Mishuras Hadin is all about. Is it a mitzvah? Where would it come from in the Torah? Is it a Beis Din thing? What exactly this is all about? Okay. So, challenges to Rav's statement of give them back their coats and pay up. Well, number one, comes from a Gemara on Daf Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph. But Metzia Lamed Gimel, if you take a look at your sheets, you see it in Source Aleph. We already had this discussion a little bit last week. Amar Yehuda Marav. Rav Yehuda says, quoting Rav, Amar Kra, Efes ki lo yeh becha evyon. The Torah says in one of the iterations of the mitzvah of tzedakah, there shall be no evyon becha among you. Shalcha kodem l'shal kol adam. You shall not be an evyon. You shall not be a pauper. Your property comes before that of other people. If you have a choice between saving your property and saving someone else's property, your property comes first. Followed by Rav Yehuda Amar Rav saying his second statement, kolam akayim ba'atzmo kach, sof bali dekach. If you fulfill this on yourself, in the end you will come to this. What in the world are you talking about? There are too many thises in that sentence. So Rashi explains in Source Vase, Ava pishalo hitilo alav akasuv. Even though the pasuk does not say that you are responsible to sacrifice your property for the sake of someone else's property, based on the pasuk, your property comes first. You don't have to become a pauper in order to prevent someone else becoming a pauper. Nonetheless, yesh la'adam likanis lifnim mishuras hadin v'lo ledakteik shali kodem. A person should go, again, beyond his legal obligation. He should not say, my stuff comes first. Imlo lehefzin mochiach. Unless there's a clear loss for him. Abim tamid medakteik. And if he's always going to be demanding about that and say, I want mine first, Horeg me olav ol gemilas chasadim utstaka. He removes from himself the yoke of doing chesed. V'sof she yitzarech lebrios. And in the end, he is going to need the support of others. So Rashi says what the Gemara is saying is, you are exempt from saving someone else's property if your property is also in danger. Take care of your own property first. But you should know, if that's the way you're going to live your life, then you're going to end up in need also, chas v'shalom, because you can't. That's not a way to live. So the first challenge that you have to bring here is really very fairly basic, which is Rashi said, im lo behefsed mochiach, unless there's a clear-cut loss. If there's a clear-cut loss for you, then you are allowed to put your own stuff first. So I don't understand. Why does Rav say that he has to go pay these workers? Why does he even say he has to restore their coats to them? This is a clear-cut loss. This is hefsed mochiach, right? That's a sort of basic challenge to his psak. What would be your answer based on Rashi himself? How would you answer this problem? Why is it that he's not able to say hefsed mochiach? I'm sorry? Can't hear you. I still can't hear you. Is it my computer?
I don't have a good answer. I'm just
betting it's just
poor.
Because
it's A. I said they're poor.
Oh, because they're poor. So it's about their need. Maybe. Maybe. I think the answer, the answer has to me.
Maybe he could afford to give it into a three left subrip. The guest of Mochias requires more than, with a guy who could afford that worker's time, and he could afford to give it to them. Not just any small left subrip.
Right, so, maybe. The problem is that Acre Chaser may not say fair. Right? Then you really should have said like you can afford it or something like that in the story. Otherwise, we're going to learn the wrong lessons from it. Yeah, the only answer that I've seen that offers anything, the Unger paper that I sent out last Matzai Shabbos has it in footnote 113, has the idea. He's quoting somebody else, or Shmudrich. Is the name, I don't know who that is, that maybe because Rashi emphasizes tamid, vim tamid medakdek, if he's always going to be medakdek, then he's poreg meyenu, etc. Then he's removing gemilas chasadim from himself. So Rav decided, today is your day to not be tamid. Today is the day when you're going to show it's not tamid. Not always. I thought that was an interesting suggestion. Today is your day. But that's one question. Here's a second question, which is much broader as a question. The Sukkot time, we always learn this Yerushalmi in Source Gimel, right? To one extent or another, depending on where you are observing the Yom Tov of Sukkot, you will encounter rain. And everybody will invoke this Yerushalmi. Komi shupata midavra be'oseyu nikra hedyot. If you are exempt from doing it and you do it anyway, that means you are called a hedyot. And people's definition of hedyot, as they quote this Yerushalmi, generally varies between depending on how much they like rain or how much they dislike rain. Whether they say it means you're just a regular Joe and you're not doing anything particularly righteous by sitting in the sukkah, or whether they take hedyot to mean that you're a fool for sitting in the sukkah, but they always invoke this and say, if you're exempt, you're exempt, and therefore don't go sit in the sukkah. Of course, in context, this line in the Yerushalmi is not actually about sukkah at all, right? This line in the Yerushalmi comes from which halachic discussion? Anybody know? Not Adar Minyanim. That's called Ha'asur B'davar Ve'oseyu. Ha'asur B'davar Ve'oseyu Nikra Roseach.
Does it come up with Sukkah?
No, it's not about Sukkah at all. It's about Kriyashma. That Gemara is talking about Rabban Gamliel and saying Kriya Shema when you're potter. It has nothing to do with sukkah whatsoever, except that, you know, one's a mitzvah sase and one's a mitzvah sase. But we borrow it. The Shulchan Aruch borrows it. Don't blame us. So the Stechemed in Os Lamed Klal Chavtes asks, based on this Yerushalmi, why is there such a thing as Lefnei Mishuras Hadin? I don't understand. You're a potter min hadavar. You are exempt from doing it, and yet you do it. Why in the world is Rav saying, go ahead and do it? He's making him a hedgeot. Why would you do that? Why am I exempt from sitting in the sukkah in the rain? And I'm exempt from saying Kriya Shema if I'm potter. And you're telling me, don't take it on, it's not worth anything. But here, go give the coats back and pay a salary.
I assume it depends if it's good out of the Chavira.
Good. So that's one answer. That's our second answer here. It's in the Chidah in source Hey. I'm jumping Dalet. We'll come back to it. The Chidah in the Pesach Einayim on Brachos writes the following. As Moshe says, that only refers to mitzvahs between ourselves and Hashem. With other people, even if, letter of the law, you're exempt from liability or exempt from responsibility, you still can be pious. Because God said so. He said to go lifnim mishuras hadin. He must have meant, okay, for ben adam lachavero. That's indeed one answer. The other answer that I'll offer you here is quoted in the Darchei Shalom from the Ritva in Kiddushin, also in the Chidah and the Pesach Einayim. If you take a look at source Dalet, he says, Lifnim Mishuras Hadin is Davka where, this is like that Tosfos, other people are Chayav. Like that Tosfos was talking about also. He says, in source Dalet, I added let's read through it. It goes pretty quickly. He's talking about the issue of Gadol HaMitzvah V'Osa Mimisha Eino Mitzvah V'Osa, that it's greater to take on a mitzvah that you are to do a mitzvah that you're actually obligated in than a mitzvah that you are potter from, that you're exempt from. So the Ritva asks, why is it greater to do a mitzvah that you're obligated in? And so he first quotes the idea that the Satan tries to get you not to do mitzvos that you are obligated in. There's a greater Yetzer Hara not to do something to say, you can't tell me what to do. That's number one, he says. And then he quotes the additional idea that mitzvahs aren't about Hashem benefiting from anything. The mitzvahs are about our merit. So if you are mitzvah, you have fulfilled Gezeiras Melech. You fulfilled Hashem's decree, and therefore there's greater reward than somebody who is not fulfilling Hashem's decree by doing so. And he continues from that to the underlined part. V'davka b'mitzvos shetziva Hashem yisbarach la'acherim sheyesh lo b'hen ratzon. Fulfilling Gezeiras Melech, fulfilling Hashem's decree, applies to things where Hashem has said, I want this. If you do something that Hashem didn't tell you to do, then you're like that Yerushalmi. He says the idea of taking something on is something where you actually, there is some kind of responsibility, even if it's not on your shoulders. So the idea that the Ritva is expressing here is that we call you a hedgeot if no one is obligated in this. But if it's something that would obligate somebody else, then indeed, that's something you should be pursuing. That's what we say, Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, like what we said from Tosfos. Is that clear? Yes, Ezra.
I looked at what I was thinking about, so it's the Ramah who brings it up in
Yeah,
Sukkah.
Correct, that's what I said. I thought the Shulchan Aruch quotes it as far as Sukkah. Right.
Right, so how would that work in terms. Sorry,
your voice is breaking up. How would that work in terms of what?
How would that application to Sukkah work in terms of when other people are chayav? The chiluk that you just suggested.
The Ritva's chiluk, in other words. Yeah, I don't think the Ritva. Right, I don't think the Ritva will agree with the Rama.
Okay, so you're saying we paskin, we know that we don't. Okay.
I'm saying the Chida's explanation will work for it. The Ritva's explanation will not.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the second halachic challenge to Rav's psak or whatever exactly it was that he was doing. You're asking, well, why are you taking on extra chumrus that makes you a hedyot? The answer is either this was benam l'chavero, and therefore you do take things on, that's the chida, or the answer is since other people would be chayav in doing this, therefore it's not called hedyot. And again, the question then is, but is this really lifnei mishuras hadin? And then you run into the problem that this isn't lifnei mishuras hadin. That's why Tosis will take it. Okay. But then our third question, a practical one, and someone asked this when we first started on this Gemara. I think it was Rav Sammy who asked this question. Why don't we worry about rewarding/encouraging carelessness by doing this? Right? The porters broke the barrel. It may even have been Pshia. Ha! Look at that. Number one, they're exempt from liability. Number two, you're going to pay them their salary. How careful do you think they're going to be next time? Or other porters who saw this. How careful are they going to be next time? So Rav Avram Sherman, in an article in the 24th volume of Tchumen, addressed a case in which this sort of question came up in source number 6. And the story that he dealt with, to say it outside of the text, was that there was a woman who worked for a bank for many, many years, and then she lost her job because she was embezzling. Then she wanted to get paid all sorts of pension things and bonuses based on her years of work. And the bank said, what kind of message are we sending? Work for us for a lot of years, then do whatever you want, get fired, and you can collect on everything. It's a good way to retire. Why in the world would we want to do that? Starting from the beginning of the quote in Source Vav, Hanhalat Habank Toenet. The bank says, Shechiv Zelazos Lefnim Mishuras Hadin Mahavat Hamritz La'ovdim Ma'acherim. This is an incentive for other workers. From now on, they're not going to care what they do. So that's the challenge that the bank puts out there. We shouldn't be giving her anything. In fact, from a halachic perspective, this is indeed a valid concern. Even though I said to you when we first talked about this that there is that line from the Ma'aril that it's tiferes to help even those who are poshea, nonetheless, take a look at source number 7. The Sma commenting on this issue of the porters and so on. You see the part that I bolded and underlined at the end of his comment. When do we say leman telech b'derech tovim kol shelo yadanu shepasha b'mezid? As long as we don't know that he did this intentionally. If he did this intentionally, there's no lifnei mishuras hadin. Absolutely not. And the Chavos Yair gives you this remarkable case in Source Ches. This is a story that's very interesting. He's writing to someone who had an issue, and he's giving him advice by quoting a certain story. And this is the story. Kamaisa Shahaya. The following story happened. There was so-and-so, the wealthy man. Hayadu alacha, who you know, he says to the person. Baladinim shivchaso. He brought his maid to Beis Din. He told her many times, don't raise the temperature in the oven. Right? They had a wood stove of some kind. Don't add wood and raise the fire during the winter. If you are going to add bundles of wood, make sure to get rid of the wood that you put on top of the stove to dry. There is wood that they put there for it to dry out, so it'll become firewood. If you're going to raise the temperature in the furnace, make sure that you first get rid of this wood that's on top. It's going to catch fire. And she was careless. She didn't pay attention. Sure enough, they catch fire. And some of his implements, his furniture, whatever it was, in fact, were burned in the fire. And it cost them money. So he brought her to Beis Din. And she, in fact, was found liable. We're in the second part of the third line. Kilotana Rakshasha Khalas Yahizim. Her only defense was, yeah, I forgot to move the wood. So the fellow who sued his maid takes the written psak. And everybody who hears about this is upset. He's suing his poor housekeeper. He's known as a respected, generous man. Why in the world is he doing this to her? The judge said, what are you doing? And he explained. He said, I don't want to ask her for anything. I'm not actually going to claim any payment from her. He says, I just want her to be careful in the future. She's got to learn a lesson. And the Chavos Yoyah, Rav Yair Bachrach, quotes the story approvingly. He says, "Lachini atzachosh gamatata asekein." He says, "You do the same thing." There was a story the fellow he was writing to had some issue where someone was drunk and damaged his property. I forget the whole story. Someone who they asked him for a place to stay came in drunk and started a fire. So he did the same thing with this fellow. But the leaving aside whether this is really the right way to deal with the maid in that particular circumstance. The overall point stands, which is, Rav, you're saying that he should, number one, not hold them liable for his barrels, and number two, he should actually pay them. Like, you're providing an incentive for future carelessness. I think it is a valid point. However, Rav Sherman quotes an idea from a fellow by the name of Rav Tzvi Pinchas Lipschitz, the Derech HaYashar, to say that was exactly the dialogue. Rabbi Bar Chana believes in the idea of Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. He believes that you do go out of your way to help people even if you're not obligated. That wasn't a shaila for him. His problem was, where is this going to lead in the future? If you go back to source Vav, the third line, Sha'av Rabbi Bar Chana Yada Shebederach Klal Yishlinuk Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. He knew all about Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. Af Mikre Sholav Savar Shekev and Jeish Lachosh Letakala. He was concerned that it could cause problems. Shim Yachrish Lam, if he doesn't say anything to them, Yovdu Av Mamon Acherim B'Pshiyusam. They're going to be careless with other people's property. Not with his in the future, because he's not planning on hiring them again. But he's worried that other people are now going to have this happen when the porters work for them. That was the idea. He said, I want to prevent that. And that's where Rav answered him. And Rav said, yeah, I get it. But that's not your job. It's their job to be careful. It's your job to go b'derech tovim. It's not your job to make them better. That was the answer. So I thought that was really interesting and probably has applications to other areas. But we spent a lot of time on this story on Pei Gimel. And now what we understand is that Rashi believes that this was a Lifnim Mishuras Hadin case. And Tosfos says, no, this is not a Lifnim Mishuras Hadin case. So I want to get a better handle on the nature of Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. What this Lifnim Mishuras Hadin thing actually is. So if I looked at the common denominators between all of the cases that we saw that are Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, helping somebody with a burden like Rabbi Shema ben Elisha, returning an aveda, a lost object, even though 12 months went by, waiting for the mezuman, right? All of these cases, I would look at and say, what they have in common is, they're ben adam l'chaveiro. Right? Going back to that idea from the Chida. These are all ben adam l'chaveiro cases. However, Rashi frames Lifnim Mishuras Hadin to include cases not just that are lifnim mishuras hadin, not just cases of adam l'chaveiro, but cases in which the other party has no right to claim anything from me. I help because the person is needy and hungry. That's the way that it's framed in our discussion. By applying it to Pei Gimel, which Tosfos does not do, he includes cases in which the other party has no right to claim anything from me. It's just that he's a needy person. Basically, Rashi ends up saying that Lifnim Mishuras Hadin is an act of chesed. That's the way Rashi Rashi frames it. That's not a chiddush. It's an act of chesed. It's b'nam l'chavero chesed. Now, technically speaking, all b'nam l'chavero is also b'nam l'makom, because Yotam Elokim or Hashem told you to do it. But fundamentally, it's a b'nam l'chavero case. That's the way that Rashi seems to frame it. However, I have a little bit of a problem, because it's not here on the sheet, it's over on the next side in Source Yud Zayin. When the Torah says, V'asisa hayashar v'hatov, Rashi writes, hayashar v'hatov zu pshara. That refers to pshara, which in our edition says, pshara lifnim mishuras hadin. Going beyond the letter of the law, pshara. That's compromise. Right? Compromise in a din Torah. Compromise that's going on in a beis din. Compromise that, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin concludes, is run by dayanim. It's run by judges. It's a legal thing. Lifnim mishuras hadin is not just about go be a nice guy. Lifnim mishuras hadin also has a din aspect to it. So it's din related. So lifnim mishuras hadin, according to Rashi, ends up being a very fuzzy term. It's a term for helping out other people, whether that means carrying their groceries or whether that means going easy on them in beis din. Rashi sees lifnim mishuras hadin in a very broad kind of, you know, help people, go easy on them, generally relate positively to others. Tosfos, on the other hand, says lifnim mishuras hadin applies only where you have some level of legal obligation, as we saw that Tosfos in Bava Kamma. If other people have a chiyuv to do this, and you have a personal exemption, but you haven't been harmed, then go ahead and do it. According to Tosfos, it's more like din. So much so that I would argue that Tosfos makes it more of a bein adam lamakom. There is still chesed. You're still helping out the other party in the litigation. But the motivation, really, from Tosfos' perspective, and I'm going to come back to this below, but Tosfos' perspective is that the motivation of lifnim mishuras hadin is to achieve din. It's a broader sense of din, but it's din nonetheless. And the further it goes from being din, the less it is lifnim mishuras hadin, and the more it just becomes chesed. Hence the pasuk in Mishlei in our Gemara. In other words, what I'm trying to suggest, and you'll see how this bears out, is that Tosfos believes that lifnim mishuras hadin is a technical term for a style of litigation or really a style of judgment which is benevolent towards the party who should lose the case. That's the way Tosfos frames it. Rashi, lifnim mishuras hadin is, hey, be a good guy, help everybody else out in a variety of ways. Tosfos says lifnim mishuras hadin is a function of pursuing din on a broader level. Is that idea? I haven't proven anything for this yet, other than what you could already see from what we've said, but that's where I'm going with it. Is the distinction itself clear? I can't tell. Everybody's frozen. It was a shocking idea. Sorry, what? For Sammy?
What did you say? Pshara works perfectly? If I understand, you're saying great. I think that's clarifying. Pshara should be a perfect application of
the. Correct. I don't think Tosfos is going to disagree with that Rashi.
It's
I think.
Beautiful. I think it's a different form of thing. It was for Rashi, which is funny. Nice to each other, so that it's sort of random.
How this fits into din is something I want to come back to. Why this is din is something that we have to get to. But yes, I think that that's true. Okay, well let me show you. Sorry?
Doesn't Pshara mean that like nobody gets everything they want, but everyone gets something? He's giving everything.
So that's a popular conception of pshara, but I would distinguish between pshara and compromise. Well, what you're describing, Moshe, is compromise, right? I know you want this, and I know what the other party wants that, and I'm going to say this one concedes and that one concedes, and nobody walks away with everything they want. However, as I understand the concept of pshara, and I'm going to bring support for it, that's not what pshara means. Rav Shechter has a classic line quoting the Rav, that in pshara, one party can walk away with 100% and the other one 0%, and that's pshara. We're going to see. Pshara is...
Rashi or something where it says pshara is like halfway, it's Milashen.
Poshrin. Right. Rashi in Sanhedrin, I think it's Dav Vav or so, says that the word pshara is like Mayim Poshrin, it's neither hot nor cold. Wait till we get there. God willing, we're even going to get there today, although maybe not. I spent a little longer on the introduction than I should have. But if you want, I want you to be able to sleep tonight. So if you want to go ahead to Source Chav Tes, you'll see the Nefesh HaRav formulation from the Rav that I think is very important for this, because I don't want to take away from your sleep on Shabbos. But let's see where we can go with it. So, in order to get there, we need to ask the question of whether Lefnim Bishuras Hadin, whether Tosos' version that's din-related, or whether the Chesed version of Rashi, whether it is a mitzvah. There's a practical application of calling Lefnim Bishuras Hadin a mitzvah. It's the question of, am I allowed to return a lost object, Lefnim Bishuras Hadin, if the owner of the lost object has sworn not to get any hana'ah from me? Back in the day, it was very popular to demonstrate your displeasure by swearing that you won't benefit from somebody. Today, we demonstrate our displeasure by grabbing benefit from other people. But back in the day, that was the way they did it. If you were angry at somebody, you swore, I'm not taking anything from you. Okay, fine. So, the Shulchan Aruch in Source Tes says, Reuven said, in this case, Reuven swore that he is not going to give his property to so-and-so. That's, to me, is the more sensible way to do it. He's not letting Shimon benefit from his property, dot, dot, dot. Umachzir lo avedaso. You can still return the lost object. Bein shenichse bal aveda asurin lamachzir, bein shenichse machzir asurin lebal aveda. No matter who was the one who swore to whom, doesn't make a difference. You're still allowed to return his lost object. Rabbi Kiva Eger says in Source Yud, why? The mitzvah ka'avid. Because you're doing a mitzvah. And even if he's a zakein ve'enu lefi chvodo, even if you're exempt, mikomako mimachzir mitzvah ka'avid, if you return the object, you are doing a mitzvah. So, what we contend is that Lefnim Bishuras Hadin, because that's a classic Lefnim Bishuras Hadin, the Gemara calls it Lefnim Bishuras Hadin. Lefnim Bishuras Hadin is a mitzvah to the extent that if you return the lost object to someone, that's not called the type of hana'ah that he's asurin. So there is a mitzvah element. What sort of mitzvah is it? Is this a mitzvah de'oraisa? So if it's going to be chesed, right, then you can't call it a mitzvah de'oraisa. And after all, Rav used the pasuk in Mishle for the chesed case on Daf Pei Gimel that Rashi thought was Lefnim Bishuras Hadin. Going back to Ezer's question, which he asked last week, of, hey, if this is chesed, then why are we omitting psukim like V'havta L'Reacha Kamocha? I point you to the Rambam in Hilchos Avel, Perek Yedad Alacha Aleph. I think I mentioned it last week also. It's going to be relevant now and in a little bit again. If you take a look at Source Yud Aleph, this is the Rambam's classic confusing formulation. The Rambam writes, Mitzvahs Asei Shel Divrayim. There is a rabbinic mitzvah. Levaker Cholim, Lenachem Aveilim, Lahotzi Ameis, Lahachnis Hakala, Lovos Haorchim, right? Taking care of those who are ill, Derabanan. Shivakol, Derabanan. Helping with a Levaya, Derabanan. Even though Kavura sounds like a Deoraisa, at least in Eretz Yisrael. Helping with a wedding, Derabanan. Escorting guests, Derabanan. And so on. All of this, derabanan. Dot, dot, dot. End of the second line. Ve'elu hein gemilos chasadim shebegufo she'elem shir. This is chesed with one's body. And then he says, Ava pi shekol mitzvos elu midivrayen. Even though all of these are rabbinic, harehin bechlal ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. They're included in ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, which as far as I knew was a pasuk. So, this formulation by the Rambam is always very, very confusing. there's a ton that's been written about this that we're not going to go through. My point in bringing it is just going back to Ezra's question, why did you bring me a pasuk in Mishlei? Why didn't you bring me a chesed pasuk from the Torah? The Rambam will tell you, because your classic chesed pasuk in the Torah is also a derabanan. As far as the Rambam is concerned, it's a derabanan anyway. But that's only if it's chesed. If I take Tosfos' view that it's din, you can make the argument it's a deoraisa. Certainly, if you're going to take the view of kofin, which we haven't gotten to yet, the question of whether you can compel someone to act with nimishuras adin, then I think it has to be a real mitzvah. Otherwise, what are you doing? I also note for you, just because you can't skip this point, although I don't think it has any legal standing, but the Sdeich Chemed quotes Rav Chaim Palagi from his Ginzei Chaim. It's page 205 of the PDF on the Ginzei Chaim in Hebrew books, who says it has to be a deoraisa. The Gemara of Mitzia Daf Lamed in Source Yud Beis, the one that we quoted last week with the pasuk from Parshas Yisro, Vodata Lamas Aderach Yel Kubas HaMaaser Asher Yasun and all that, Zulav Mimishur Asadin, says Yerushalayim was destroyed because they carried out Din Torah, and they didn't go with Nimishur Asadin. So Rav Chaim Palagi says, if Yerushalayim is destroyed for it, it's got to be a deoraisa. How could it not be? Fitting Gemara to learn on Yom Yerushalayim. However, there are those who argue against that. I'm not going into the whole discussion. Look in the Sdeich Chemed if you want the discussion about this. Is the Shagas Aryeh, who makes a similar argument about Berachas HaTorah, that it must be Deoraisa because we say that Yerushalayim is destroyed because they didn't make Berachas HaTorah first. There's a lot to discuss on that. It's kind of a weak proof on the whole. But it's worth mentioning. The Sdeich Chemed thought it was worth mentioning. But what could you use as a source for saying Lefnim Mishu as Hadin, as Din, is Deoraisa? So there are 2.5 sources. I say 2.5 because the last one really isn't. But the first two really are. The first one is that Gemara, which I brought you in Source Yud Beis, the one in which Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi was Lefnim Mishu as Hadin with the burden of the wood, and we quoted the pasuk from Yisro, HaMaaseh Asher Ya'asun, Maaseh is Din, Ya'asun is Lefnim Mishu as Hadin. That pasuk, right? Yisro says to Moshe, you should inform them of what they should do, including the deeds they should do. That's a reference to Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. The Gemara does not make clear how exactly the words Asher Ya'asun lead to Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. So I've made a little table for you of various approaches to how this works. Ranging from the view, one view brought in the Marsha, is that the words Asher Ya'asun are extra. So therefore, Maaseh is Din, Asher Ya'asun must be the next step, to go beyond Din. The Torah Tamima says, it's because of the Nun in Asher Ya'asun, the Nun is extra, it means something additional to Din. The Marsha brings a second idea, that it's because Ya'asun is in the plural. Maaseh is the dayan, that's the judge. Asher Ya'asun is what the litigants are going to do in going beyond their legal obligations. That's another answer. The Rav, in his book Halachic Morality, has an essay called Religious Styles. It was very funny. Last Shabbos, or 2 Shabbos ago, I picked it up just because I wanted to read the essay, and I found this. He says, it's Asher Ya'asun because it is in the plural, and what he says is, Lefnim Mishuras Hadin is subjective. Each person does it in their own way, in their own style, depending on their own religious personality. So Asher Ya'asun is in the plural. Maaseh is what everybody does. Ya'asun, in the plural, that's what everybody is going to do in their own style. I'm going to come back to the Rav's idea, but that'll be next time. The Netziv has this idea that it's actually just the opposite. He says the added nun reduces it. It's maktin, meaning maaseh is what everyone has to do. Ya'asun don't always do this. this Lifnim Bishuras Hadin. And then there's this piece from Rav Mecklenburg, Aksava Kabbalah, that I just don't understand. It's in Aksava Kabbalah in Parshas Yisro, Yudches Chaf. He refers you to a comment of his in Devarim Dalet. I didn't understand either of them. If anyone wants to take a look at it and explain it to me, I would be very appreciative, because I don't understand what he's doing. So one way, Moshe, you can ask a question. Your hand is frozen halfway up. No. Okay. The one way to look at this is that the Lifnim Mishuras Hadin is a De'oraisa because of his drasha and Bava Mitzia Daf Lamed from the Pasuk in Parshas Yisro. However, take a closer look, right? What items, what mitzvos were found in this Pasuk? Bikur Cholim, Kivura, right? It's pretty mitzvos that the Rambam just labeled as being De'rabanan. And these are mitzvos of chesed, other than the invocation of din. So I would argue that this pasuk is actually more about chesed than about din. It'll satisfy Rashi. Rashi's very happy, because in Rashi, Lifnim Mishuras Hadin is all about chesed. That's fine. And Tosfos could explain that the Gemara is talking about the chesed benefits that come with going Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. But this pasuk is not intended as a source, as a deoraisa source, for going Lifnim Mishuras Hadin in din itself. It's not my own idea. Rav Sammy, your face is frozen, and I'm not sure if it's a grimace. It shifted. Okay, it wasn't a grimace. This idea that it's not really meant as a pasuk, as a source, is found in the Ramban. It's found in the Rambam and in the Ramban. If you take a look at Source Yudala, look at the Rambam. In Shoresh Beis, in the introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvos, he talks about people's foolishness, because he does that a lot. And he says, people get even worse than what he had discussed before this point. When people find some drasha from a pasuk that says, go do this, or don't do that, and it's clear, these are all derabanans. They insist on including them in mitzvos as mitzvos on the list of 613 because they get a mention in the Torah. He says that's why people count Bikur Cholim and a Shiva call as a De'oraisa, because of the drasha, and so on. He says, those aren't mitzvos De'oraisa. What are you doing? Get them off your list of mitzvos. And he goes on to include V'avta l'recha kamocha. The Rambam says, of course these aren't. Yes, it's good. It's saying these are good things to do. That doesn't make it a mitzvah. And if you look at the Ramban, he says something that really all of us should have recognized the moment we saw that Gemara. Who is speaking in that pasuk in Parshas Yisro? Who's the speaker?
Yisro.
Yisro is the speaker. What's his goal at that point? Is he trying to give you mitzvahs? Did he go up Har Sinai? What is Yisro doing? What's his goal?
Advising Moshe.
Yeah, he's giving him advice about Gam Kol HaMasel, Mekomo Yavoh Shalom, how to manage the people. He's giving Moshe leadership advice. Says the Ramban, in his Hasaga to Sefer HaMitzvah, Shorash Aleph, and Source Test Vav, Ulefi Dati Od Ki Ein Roy Limnos Shemitzvah Mishum Azharas Yisro LaMoshe Rabbeinu. He says, don't count anything of what Yisro said as a mitzvah. He says, what was he doing? He says, he was trying to teach them to be Zrizin and Mitzvahs, Kidil Shakin Beinayim, Ava Ve'achva Shalom Vareus. He wanted to make sure they'd all get along. Here's a good policy. Lefnim Mishuras Adin. That doesn't make it a mitzvah. It makes it Yisro's good advice. That's all it is, says Ramban. So your first idea, that it's from Asher Yasun, is weak. The second idea is stronger. Ve'asisa hayashar ve'hatov. In truth, I would have assumed that Ve'asisa Ayasha Ve'atov, which is a pasuk in Devarim Vav Yudches, I would have assumed that that was not a source for Lefnei Mishuras Hadin at all. Because the Gemara only brings Ve'asisa Ayasha Ve'atov as a halachic statement regarding two very specific things, which I listed for you in bullet points in Tezayin. Dina de Bar Mitzvah, the idea that if I'm selling off my land, I have to give right of first refusal to the neighbor, so that the neighbor can have sequential properties, consecutive properties, and Shuma Hadila Olam, having to do with returning property that had been taken to collect a debt. Somebody owed me money, he defaulted on the debt, I got his land in the basin, and then he came up with the cash to pay the debt, I have to give him back the land. That's because of Asisa Ayasher Ve'atov, Shuma Hadila Olam. But it doesn't say anything about Lefnei Mishuras Hadin. And yet, if you flip the page, Torah Yitzayin, and Rashi says, Vasisa Yashav Yatov, Zup Shara Lefnei Mishuras Hadin. Rashi thinks that it is. And it's not just Rashi. It's Ramban also. It's 1124, so I'm going to accelerate a little bit. But if you take a look at Torah Yitzchas, you see the Ramban? Ramban gives you this idea of, I bolded it, U'abaseinu bezeh medrash yafa amru zup shara vilifnim mishuras adin. Note that he has a vav. I'm not playing games with his vav. But that drasha is part of his comment to Vasisa Ayasher Ve'atov, and he says the second paragraph in Yudches V'zeh Inyan Gadol. This is a big deal because the Torah can't tell me everything about the way you relate to other people. Too much of it is going to be subjective. So we get a lot of rules like don't gossip, don't take revenge, take care of people, and along the way, Pshara v'lifnim mishuras hadin. The Ramban says it's from Vasisa Ayasher Ve'atov. The Ketzos HaChoshen invokes it in Source Yutes when he's talking about a takana in a community to return lost objects, even if they're found in the sea. He says that's a good idea. Minog Tov V'yashru. That's a good minog to practice. And he quotes you Vasisa Ayasher Ve'atov as a basis for it. The Minchas Yitzchak brings it in a tshuva in Source Chaf, where there was a lawsuit between a community and the local butcher, and we're going to come back to that lawsuit, God willing, next week. But he also says, we forced the tzibur to lefnim mishuras hadin because of Vasisa Hayashar Ba'atov. He quotes the Chasim Sofer, although the Chasim Sofer invoked Vasisa Hayashar Ba'atov, but not lefnim mishuras hadin. Side note. But the there are ample halachic sources saying Ve'asisa Hayashar Ve'atov is your basis for lefnim mishuras hadin. Is that really a true de'oraisa? Well, the Sefer Shut Kinyan Torah thinks so. Rav Avram Horovitz thinks so. He believes that it is. Rav Sammy, this was the piece that I mentioned to you. I think this was the piece that I mentioned to you because I was learning it, and then you came onto the Zoom. And I was really struck by the beginning of it. He says, thank you so much for your beautiful letter. I don't understand the word you wrote. It's a very funny read. If you want to see it in the PDF on Hebrew Books, it's pages 161, 162. So, he quotes the Sefer Minchas Pitim of Rav Meir Arik, who says, indeed, that the Ramban believes that it is, in fact, a De'oraisa. He notes that the Sefer Hari Besamim disagrees. Rav Aryeh Leibush Horovitz disagrees with it, saying that it can't be. That if it were a De'oraisa, Rav Nachman, remember that Gemara in Bav Mitzia about the lost object found in the marketplace. And remember that Rav Nachman says, even if the original owner is standing there screaming, it doesn't matter, you don't have to return it to him. So the Hari Besamim challenges and says, if it were a De'oraisa, how could Rav Nachman say you get to keep the lost object yourself? But he disagrees. He notes that there are ways to resolve Rav Nachman, ways which we're going to actually come back to, God willing, next week. And he supports the view of the Minchas Pitim based on the Magid Mishnah, which I brought you in Source Chav Beis. The Magid Mishnah also talks about using Vasisa Ayasher Ve'atov as a catch-all for various ways in which we have to conduct ourselves for the benefit of others, and he argues that that's a Lefnim Mishuras Hadin concept as well. So it seems that Ramban is going to argue that Vasisa Ayasher Ve'atov will be the basis for Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. I don't know if Tosfos would say that. I can't find a Tosfos anywhere who says Vasisa Ayasher Ve'atov is the basis for Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. If I had that, I'd be really, really happy. But that I have not been able to find. But our second possibility is to say this, you say Shabbat Tov, the half possibility, which I don't take seriously, but I mention it because I found it referenced by Rav Yonas and Eibeshitz, is Gemara Brachos Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, in which we have the Tefillah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem says, Yiratzo Milafanai, that I should go Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. Right? And then, of course, Avram Fried's song, Tanya, and so on. But the original part is not there. The original part is Hashem's Tefillah for himself, that I want to go Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. And so the argument is made. Rav Yonas and Eibeshitz in the Yaros, Devash Chelak Aleph, Yud, they suggest that V'alachta Bidrachav is Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. The Torah says you have to walk in Hashem's ways. Hashem is lifnim mishuras hadin. Therefore, you have to go lifnim mishuras hadin. I happen to think that that actually is a very weak source. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos actually says Valachta Bidrachav needs to go the middle of the road, not to go lifnim mishuras hadin. In Hilchos Deos, Perek Aleph Halacha Hey. But that's your other possibility. So, pausing to review here and apologizing because I think the review in the beginning wasn't much of a review. But I hope people got something out of that. But just to review what we did today, we challenged Rav's statement of return the cloaks and pay them for their work. Number one, we said, I don't understand. You had a clear-cut loss. Your Aveda should come first. And we gave the possible answer that Rashi says, you're supposed to go lifnim mishuras hadin with things. You're not supposed to demand your own rights. Tamid? So today is the day when you won't demand your own rights. We asked, isn't this an inappropriate chumrah, nikra hedyot? And we gave two answers. Either no, because it's been on l'chavero, that was the chidah's answer, or the ritva's answer, that where other people are chayav, it's still not hedyot. Granted that, it's hard to apply that here, where no one else is chayav, because they broke your barrels. So that's still tricky. We also asked, aren't you rewarding carelessness, giving an incentive for carelessness in the future? And yes, that does seem to be a concern, but the argument is made that your chiyuv is still to teach yourself to go lifnim mishuras hadin. We asked, what exactly is this mitzvah? We noted that our examples are b'nan l'chavero examples. Rashi has this very broad chesed way of looking at it, b'nan l'chavero chesed. Tosus is more narrow, applies it to cases that are closer to din specifically. And then we asked, is it really a mitzvah de'oraisa, whether din-related or chesed-related? We said it's hard to do that from a chesed perspective. But we suggested that as an extension of din, it may be de'oraisa, not from ha'maseh asher ya'asun, which is Yisro talking fundamentally, but rather from ve'asisa ha'yosher ve'atov, as explained in Rashi, as explained in Ramban, the Ketzos, the Menchas Yitzchak, the Kenyan Torah, and certainly that's a stronger answer than ralach the bidrachav. What I want to do next week is talk about another quasi-biblical idea of hiddur mitzvah, and specifically about hiddur mitzvah of din, which is really where I wanted to get to with this. I apologize, I didn't get to it. But hiddur mitzvah of din is lifnim mishuras hadin. So I want to start with that next time, and then talk about also the issue of compelling others to act lifnim mishuras hadin, whether it applies to a tzibur, and that'll be, God willing, on Wednesday at 11:30. So I wish you a good Shabbos, as well as a Chag Sameach, Yom Yerushalayim Sameach, and stay safe. Thank you.
Nice.